Ladies and gentlemen, time is of the essence, always. We just sometimes don't realize it, or it's never of the essence, and we're too conscious of it. I can't figure out which, but somebody knows. The Prime Minister of Thailand. You know, every world economy, every nation in the world, the economy seems to be in a bit of a slump, and nobody really knows what to do about it. The Japanese are in the 10th year of their recession. We're fighting off a little thing over here. And things are going south in Thailand, too. But unlike here and in Japan, denial and dithering are not the order of the day in Bangkok. No, Thaksin Shinawatra. Thank you very much. The Prime Minister of Thailand has a solution to the economic woes of his country. Turn the clock ahead 1 hour. It's right here. It's right here in the paper. You don't look at me like that. The proposition, which has attracted widespread opposition within Thailand and among its neighbors, would move the country 1 hour later, from 7 hours ahead of Greenwich Mean Time, to 8. Well, of course that's going to fix it. Why would you not? It would be the same time zone observed by Singapore, Malaysia, and Hong Kong. Prime Minister Thaksin, get those toxins out. His argument is that jumping into the next time zone would help financial markets in Bangkok operate in closer harmony with the larger markets in Singapore, Hong Kong, and Kuala Lumpur, thereby attracting more foreign investments. More broadly, he hopes the shift might shake the perception among investors that Thailand is behind. More in tune with the sleepy economies of Myanmar, formerly Burma. Set the clock ahead 1 hour, why don't you? Jumpstart the economy. Or, for more economic progress, play both sides of the game. The law firm hired to advise the Energy Department on how to open a nuclear waste dump at Yucca Mountain, Nevada, was simultaneously lobbying Congress and the administration on behalf of the nuclear power industry on the project. Critics call it a conflict. Wait a minute, let's review this again. The law firm was advising the Energy Department on whether it was okay to open Yucca Mountain to nuclear waste. The energy industry, which desperately wants to dump its nuclear waste somewhere otherwise, hired the same law firm to lobby on its behalf. Critics call that a conflict. We just call it, hello, welcome to the show.
sacred night. Oh, give me to glory, God. Our lights dim, we have so far to go. The storms are hard on this endless road. Oh, sacred night. Gets our dreams, the dying sun, purple night.
You know that you my boy, and I'll always give you five. Da-de-a-da.
I hit that job, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that job, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand. Hit that job, Jack. Put it in your pocket till I get back. Time and time waits for no man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
Standing on the corner, all full of jive. But you know that you my boy, and I'm forced to give you five.
Hit that jive, Jack. I put it in your pocket till I get back. I'm going downtown to see a man, and I ain't got time to shake your hand.
Jack, put it in your pocket till I get back. Going downtown to see. your man, and I ain't got time. I ain't got time. I ain't got time. Shake your hand, so won't you put it in your pocket till I get back. I hit that jive, Jack.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to the July 29th edition of the show. From the home of the home, they have not yet figured out that economic problems could be solved here just by setting the clock ahead an hour, the way they have in Thailand. But, you know, Thailand is so advanced in so many ways, isn't it? Or is that advanced, or is it the other thing? Anyway, one learns in that article, by the way, about the Prime Minister of Thailand wanting to set the clock ahead to give investors the view that it's a more forward-looking country. One learns an astonishing thing. You know, all the time that we were in the Cold War and really at odds with what they then called Red China, We heard all about, you know, the killings and the imprisonments and the lack of freedom and all that stuff that was supposed to turn us against the regime. Here's one fact. I didn't know this. Did you? You don't have to answer the radio. Don't talk to the radio. But this was a fact that had been withheld from us, I believe, until now. This huge country, China, now it has 1.2 billion people. How many time zones are there in China? Again, don't talk to the radio. Just in your head, think about it. There are 12 time zones in Russia. There's one time zone in China. Ugh! Do you know what that means? Half the country's got to get up in the middle of the night. I can't believe it. It's in the New York Times, ladies and gentlemen. Let's check it out. But, well, I should have checked it out. Rather than come on here on the radio and blurt something I read in the New York Times, but one time zone in China, that's so much worse than child slave labor, isn't it, when you stop to think about it? Because it's every day. It's every day. All right, more fascinating information coming in on that nutty thing we called an election last fall. At least almost 1,400 illegal votes tainted November's election in St. Louis, including ballots cast by felons, unregistered voters, or imposters using the names of dead citizens, according to a blistering report released by the Missouri Secretary of State. The illegal votes were not enough to sway any particular contest, but the Secretary of State, Matt Blunt, that guy's got a future. There's a future in politics. Hi, I'm Matt Blunt. You know, I tell people things the way they are. Secretary of State Matt Blunt said his investigation did suggest a conspiracy to pad election results in heavily Democratic St. Louis and kind of Republican suburbs. Well, it's a wash. It's a tainted wash. And defects in election equipment used in Chicago and suburban Cook County may have caused tens of thousands of votes in the last fall's election to be thrown out, according to the Chicago Tribune, which obtained an otherwise confidential report. The trouble occurred in a low-tech piece of equipment called a vote recorder, the device into which voters slide those punch card ballots. It was misaligned by about the width of three hairs. You know what I'm saying. Out of roughly 50,000 vote recorders in Chicago and Cook County suburbs, half were with defective templates that failed to line up the ballots accurately. The alignment problem could account for nearly one-third of the 123,000 ballots in the city and county that lacked a recordable vote for president, twice the error rate for the last presidential election. Illinois earned the distinction thereby of having the most problem-plagued election of any state in the nation, including Florida. So who knew? I say we throw the whole thing out. Not because, you know, not because I want Al Gore in there. Even Bill Clinton doesn't. There's a piece in again, the New York Times says Clinton still doesn't know why Gore was angry at him. Still. Two reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, this economy class syndrome thing, we've been talking about this on the broadcast, the tendency of people sitting in in economy class on long-range flights to develop blood clots in their legs, DVT, it's called, by the people who know medical stuff, deep vein thrombosis. It's come up, it's become public in recent days, recent years. We've started talking about it about a year or two ago on this broadcast. International airlines were warned about the dangers of it more than 30 years ago, but failed to warn passengers. A retired South African medical professor says he co-authored a report on the subject in the British Heart Journal in the late 1960s, stating that long flights increased the risk of deep vein thrombosis. He and a young British doctor, Peter Richards, concluded that sitting still for long periods combined with the pressure of aircraft seats pressing against the backs of passengers' legs and a shortage of oxygen in cabins created an ideal climate for deep vein thrombosis. In their report, they advised passengers should take a stroll to the washroom. His report was shown to British Airways before it was published. Speaking of which, the cold I had last week here and that I suffered with for most of this week, I'm pretty, you know, you never know where colds come from. They come from the same place where missing persons go to. But I'm pretty sure this one came from an airline flight that I took back from Montreal. That's right, it's Canadian germs. Now, it's just, ladies and gentlemen, no matter how much you or your employer pays for, you know, the most luxurious seat you can buy on an airplane, you're still breathing the same crappy air. There's no such thing as first-class air. There's no such thing as air in an airplane. There's the first misnomer. There's no air in an airplane. As we understand the concept of air, they, for a long time now, have been economizing. Apparently, it costs a lot of money to suck in fresh air because it's minus 50 degrees when you suck it in. So it has to be heated. Probably has to be humidified because it's very dry. So that costs money. So rather than do that, they just recirculate the same crap in the cabin over and over and over and over and over. Have I made the point? Oh, over and over again. And so the germs get that nice ride. Now, here's the deal I'd make with some airline before there's no competition. While there's still competition and there's still the basis of some, you know, somebody wants to be known for something good. Forget the food. The food stinks. The food's crap no matter what airline, no matter what class. It stinks. It's a waste of time and money. It crowds the aisle. You can't get up and get that exercise you need for your legs because the food cart's always in the way. And the food, and I can bring my own food. The technology exists. I have those nice sealable plastic bags. Can bring a couple of those on board. Can bring my own water. Can bring my own booze. Now I could even bring my own movies. The only thing I can't bring on board, ladies and gentlemen, yet, is my own air. So to the airline that first says, "Hey, we're going to open the spigot and let some real air in again," you got my patronage, right there. Put it there, Jack, right there. Airline seats, says the British Observer, a London newspaper, are too small for today's taller, larger people, according to new government research. The British Civil Aviation Authority recommends passengers get 2 inches more space. The hope is eventually to increase seat space by 4 to 5 inches. Good luck. Give me some air. I'll squat. How about that? Oh, who would have thunk it, department, ladies and gentlemen? Rupert Murdoch, a cad, says his ex-wife. Oh, man. Rip out the front page now. Speaking of Rupert Murdoch, the FCC bowed to his request. Odd. That he now be able to own the Chris Kraft station. So Rupert Murdoch now owns 2 TV stations in New York and Los Angeles each to give him even more power. He's, but according to his former wife, Anna, just to give you some perspective, he's unfaithful, extremely hard, and ruthless. But that's not the Rupert Murdoch. She says he's not the man she fell in love with. Yeah, he's not the man I fell in love with either. It's true. Now remarried and known as Anna Mann, the former Mrs. Murdoch has broken a 3-year silence in a devastating attack that shatters the media tycoon's portrayal of an amicable divorce. Oh, come on. Now you're telling me Rupert slanted the news? He behaved badly, says the former Mrs. Murdoch. However, for my children's sake, I've said nothing. I've waited all this time for him to make it right again, but he never took the opportunity. She says the affair with Wendy Deng was the end of the marriage. She wants none of her children to take over News Corporation. That makes two of us. I think there's going to be a lot of heartbreak and hardship with this succession, she says. There's been such a lot of pressure that they needn't have had at their age. She emerged from her divorce wondering if the critics had been right about her husband. I began to think the Rupert Murdoch that I loved died a long time ago, she said. He's extremely hard and ruthless and determined he was going to go through with the divorce no matter what I wanted or what I was trying to do to save the marriage. He had no interest in that whatsoever. She had devoted her life to Murdoch and his company, only to be replaced by a woman half her age, and then booted off the board of the News Corporation. She went, not before telling the board that she'd been with the company since she was 18, and that her leaving was not just the end of my marriage, it was the end of a whole life. The man that she remarried, she says, one door closes and another door opens. He's a kind, spiritual, gentle man. I don't think he'll let me down. I don't believe Mrs. Murdoch was bitter, said the man who interviewed her.
No.
No, sir. She was not. And finally in the week's news, if you're rich and want to get government help, run a bank into the ground. The Pritzker family, richer than God, richer than Rupert, I think. The Pritzkers open this bank, the Superior Bank. It blows. Oh, God. How much money? But the feds are going in to bail it out for $500 million and providing a $1.5 billion line of credit to the new Superior that will be emerging from the wreckage. Meanwhile, the Pritzkers, I don't think they get hurt. If you want to protest this, don't stay at a Hyatt.
So glad.
so glad I got good
religion. I'm so glad.
So glad I got good religion.
Pizza.
If he'd been taken out the Maori clay.
Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad you got good religion?
Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad you got Ooh. Good religion?
Ain't you glad?
Ain't you glad you got good religion?
If he'd
been taken out the Maori clay.
Direct from the trading floor of Corey and Slocum Oliver, this is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Tuccinello on the trading floor. This week, the insistent beat of the merger mambo was quieted by the heavy-handed DJ. Department of Justice, that is. United Airlines and U.S. Airways dropped their plans to become the only airline listed under the letter U after threats of an antitrust lawsuit chilled the waters. And the air. Hot on the heels of the Microsoft lawsuit, which still threatens to break up the software giant into a dozen little Picasofts, the merger and acquisitions binge created by the bulls and bubbles of the late 90s is inspiring one heck of a hangover, as savvy investors continue their year-long search for the promised land known as the bottom. Corporate honchos are beginning to get the message. Much like amoebas, corporations can't merge their way out of trouble. It may be that bulls and bubbles don't mix. One of the telltale sounds of the ever-softening economy is the crescendoing drumbeat of the layoff lambada. Many high-tech companies are going through their third rounds of laying off employees, trying to slash their costs as fast as customers are slashing their orders. But one high-tech firm thinks it has the formula for making the turnaround happen. And here's a phrase that's so last year, on Internet time. He's Jonathan Lamb, CEO of Quasilent Technologies. Jonathan, welcome to the trading floor.
Thanks, Mike. Interesting trading floor.
Yes, it's just a broom closet with two microphones, but at least we're still on the air.
Yeah.
Jonathan, Quasilent was one of the NASDAQ high flyers until last year when now suddenly you have to put on snorkel gear to find the stock.
Is that a question?
Well, it's a question in the form of a statement. The implied question, I guess, being, wouldn't you agree?
Mike, there's no denying that there have been some rough times at Quasilent. Our annual black and red ball, for example, which at one time was the largest, most extravagant, most fabulous party in the entire tech world.
Last year you held it, I believe, on an active-duty aircraft carrier sailing through the Golden Gate.
That's right, and this past April we held it in the function room of the Cupertino Red Lobster.
Not even an Olive Garden.
No, sir. So we know this is a very tough economy.
Wow.
A lot of the firms around us are laying off people left and right. But we don't think that works for us, either as an HR premise.
Human resources for our non-corporate listeners.
Or as an economic prospect. Uh-huh. Laying off people means less work gets done. Fewer people have jobs.
But aside from contracting out to Asian slave labor, layoffs are the only sure way to cut labor costs, aren't they?
Well, they used to be, Mike. Quasilent, as you know, is the world's largest supplier of virtual emulation software. 90% of the Fortune 500, before they became the 400 in the big magazine devaluation, were using our software. Our products, as you know, Mike, are used to pre-scenarioize business strategies before significant resources are committed to those strategies. So we decided to heal thyselves, as you were, and see if the layoff scenario really was best for the Quasilent family. And it turned out not to be.
And what scenario proved better? Just a generalized belt tightening?
No, Mike. That's just a panacea in search of a problem. What works for us, and we've entered our third quarter of operating with this strategy now, is the reverse payroll.
The reverse payroll? It almost sounds like your employees pay you for the privilege of coming to work.
That's exactly what it is, Mike. We believe that the Quasilent experience, the ability to be creative, to work constructively with a talented nucleus of others in an informal but competitive environment, and the ability to see your ideas be realized and take flight in the marketplace, this is all an experience that most of our people value very highly. Any economist will tell you that something that's of high value that's being given away is a loss to somebody. We decided to recapture that value. So each of our employees up to the upper tier of middle management, of course, mm-hmm. is being offered the opportunity to continue the Kwazalent experience with health coverage thrown in for a price that's really very, very reasonable once you cross the conceptual barrier.
Of being willing to pay for your job.
That's right.
And what's the response been from the workforce so far?
Well, about what you'd expect. A little grumbling in the ranks, of course. Some nasty stuff left on message boards. Basically uh-huh. the kind of blowing off steam effect that change always produces.
Uh-huh.
But the end result, Mike, when our people realize that we're very serious about this, that the choice is either pay what the job is worth or somebody else will, because there's a glut of talented people out there right now who are spending their days doing nothing more challenging than programming their TiVos, the end result is that retention rates have been pretty damn respectable.
Of course, the more people you keep, the fewer new folks you have to train. So
that's factored into our pricing, of course.
Of course. Now, have you had to make any changes to the workplace itself since the people there are paying to be there?
Well, we've upgraded the coffee service.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to afford to get the restrooms cleaned daily, that sort of thing, Mike. But yeah. just the ability to not have to look at our customer base as our sole revenue stream is worth all of those little adjustments, believe me.
Mm-hmm. I guess the 800-pound elephant of a question, Jonathan, is how do your employees earn the money they need to support themselves mm-hmm. if they're paying you for their jobs?
Well, Mike, in the old days, I would have been tempted to say, hey, not my problem. But we have more of a partnership attitude towards our people now. Uh-huh. They've all got computers at their workstations,
of course.
They all are equipped with hot T1 lines. And we've just taken the attitude, hey, as long as they give us their 7 or 8 a day, whatever they want to do with their free time, that is totally up to them.
Jonathan Lamb of Kwazalent, thanks for taking us on what just might be a guided tour of our future.
My pleasure, Mike.
I don't have to pay you to be my guest, do I?
Not yet.
And that's Mind Your Own Business for this week. Next time, companies insure against their demise as bankruptcy futures come into their own. Until then, from the trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, I'm Mike Tuchinello, saying this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
Look, he's calling up my wall. Black and hairy, very small. Now he's up above my head.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you from Advertising Age, the Bible of the advertising industry, hence the name. Lexus Eyes Brand ID Consultant.
What?
I'll read it for you. Before I read that, I have to point out that the California Horse Racing Board has voted to drop barriers to advertising on jockeys' apparel, owners' silks, and racetrack saddle cloths. So, horse racing will now look like NASCAR. But now, to this thing. Lexus is grappling with its identity, like an adolescent about to turn 12 years old. Toyota, which owns Lexus, has sent requests for proposals to consultants to help develop a roadmap to the brand's future. We haven't done anything of this magnitude since Lexus launched in fall of 1989, says Vice President of Marketing Mike Wells. We want to keep this momentum going. We want to clearly identify that Lexus magic. Now is the time to figure out Lexus's DNA. Yeah, Lexus could be the real killer. The marketer wants research with consumers and Lexus dealers to get to the soul of Lexus. The project comes as Lexus enjoys record sales. Still, several industry insiders suggest the research move marks trouble with the ad agency. Not so, maintains Lexus and its agency. Mr. Wells, Vice President of Advertising at Lexus, just has an affinity for research. Toyota's own year-old internal research revealed the Lexus brand is ill-defined in consumers' minds, although it is known for quality and luxury. But Mr. Wells disputed the issue of whether Lexus is ill-defined. Quote, non-owners may say that, but our buyers get it, he said. Like Toyota, Lexus is working to draw in younger customers. The research could help achieve that goal. Still, says an auto analyst, Brett Hoselton, Lexus has not been able to break out of the image as a high-priced Toyota with a lot of features, he says. The same positioning that built the Toyota brand, quality, reliability, and durability, won't work long-term in the luxury category because upscale buyers demand that from all brands, he says. Lexus rejiggered its brand tagline last fall from its original "The Relentless Pursuit of Perfection" to "The Passionate Pursuit of Perfection." The new tag is meant to be more emotional. Want us to get more emotional. All right. I hate my car. How's that? Emotions run rampant, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature.
Are all gray, walk all alone on the Champs-Élysées. It just reminds me of the German tanks rolling through the arches. October in Paris, it's not a great night. Everyone's pissy, the trains are on strike. It must have been better in 25. Josephine Baker and absinthe. You're absent in my life. There's nothing I can do about it. The more I travel, the more I unravel. You're absent in my life. It's raining in Paris, the red traffic lights stream like mascara, diffusing the sky. It just reminds me how much I dislike Monet's water lilies. And it's so pathetic when someone name drops, puts famous dead artist in Paris in songs. Please forgive me for all I've done wrong. Today my self-worth is absent. You're absent in my life. There's nothing I can do about it. The more I travel, the more I unravel. You're absent. You're gone. You left me in the storm. You're absent.
On the air, please don't make me more self-conscious than I already am. Chuck, are we ready?
Yeah, we're on in 10.
That sounds terrible. From the fundraising luncheon for the Bullocks Wiltshire Museum, the first museum devoted to the history, to the style, to the folk ways of one of the premier department store destinations in all of Southern California during the 40s, during the 50s, even during the 1960s. I am Blackwell. This is Strictly from Blackwell. We have a wonderful little, I say little because not many people should have little studio audience, and we love each and every one of you, except you, Bleachy, because you asked the question about my facelift before we went on the air. But that's all in good fun. The lawsuit is being settled. We have wonderful conversation to get to today. I want to say one thing first about, maybe I'm out of touch. Maybe finally I've turned the corner and I don't know where the fashion sense of a country, of a woman, can possibly be. I have just seen, and maybe I'm the last one, I don't know, maybe I'm lucky that way, I'm a second grade kickout, I catch up with things late, to see the Britney Spears, what is it, a commercial, it's a video, something, it's a Britney Spears something for one of the cola drinks. I know she's a young girl, I know this is the age of letting it all hang out, but would Elizabeth Taylor at 19 or 20 or 21 have done something like this? Would a young Bette Midler, she was working in the baths. Even in the baths, she wasn't doing, she wasn't looking, she wasn't putting on an appearance that said, that made you want to wash your hands after you turned off the TV. Of course, there wasn't TV in the baths, but you know what I mean. I don't know, is it me? Would you want to drink whatever it is this girl is selling? I wouldn't want to wash in it, let alone put it in my mouth. All right, we are having good conversation today with Danny Santangelo. Danny is pursuing a wondrous path. He is a cosmetic surgery consultant to many of the best known people in the business, and now he is sharing some of his wisdom in a new book called Be a New You Every Day. Danny Santangelo.
Thank you.
We've waited too long, and yet not long enough to have you here in Strictly from Blackwell. Welcome.
Thanks, Mr. Blackwell. Well, I'm very excited because we know during the last 20, 25, 30 years, the first, what I call the first cosmetic surgery revolution was going on.
Interesting.
And that was where the woman, and ultimately the man,
of course,
felt that it was okay. It was not a bad thing
say. No.
I don't like this part of my body, and I'm going to change it for the better. And, you know, I mean, you just look around.
Yeah.
The world is a better place.
Of course.
For that.
Incredible.
But that wasn't, you know, that was chasing a fantasy, Mr. Blackwell, honestly.
Which we don't.
It was the fantasy of taking what we thought was one.
Yeah.
Permanent state of being and trading it for another, and those are fantasies. And I love, nobody likes fantasy more than I.
No,
but let's live in the new reality, I say.
Okay.
And
good.
Especially since it's ever so much more exciting.
Really?
Than that. And I call it the second cosmetic revolution.
The second cosmetic revolution, mm-hmm. Okay. And this is going on now, or you're saying this is going to come to be. Or we've been through it, what?
What I'm saying, Mr. Blackwell, is that this is where it's going. I want to try to lead it. I think that the premier people in the field do, too.
Well,
they became frustrated.
Of course.
Make me a new nose and leave it at that.
Oh, no.
The book came out of many months of talking to the leading people in the field and sort of, you know, poking around in their brains and seeing where they see the future. And it really is once you have come through the realization that you can re-sculpt yourself, then the question is,
why not?
Why stop?
Why stop? Yeah.
And so what we think is coming, and it's coming with the speed and the power of a runaway freight train, is a world of fashion in cosmetic surgery. That there is not, you're not choosing your new nose.
No, you're choosing
this year's nose.
Okay.
And come next year, you may get, instead of getting a new coat or a new dress or a new suit or a new whatever, you'll get a new nose.
A new nose. Mm-hmm. A new nose for the fall of...
Sure.
Are you saying this maybe for the season?
Could be.
And mm-hmm. rather than mm-hmm. you having to say, this nose is me,
mm-hmm.
you would be saying, in effect, I am this nose.
I don't know if you'd be saying that.
Okay.
But it really opens a whole new world.
Yeah.
And as fashion becomes more plastic, the plastic world becomes more fashion. It's a merging of the two, don't you think?
I think it is. And I think we have to merge to our other guest, who is sitting here like a lovely rose, just waiting to drop some pollen of information on our waiting buds.
Thank you.
Bobby Crispin Ball, mm-hmm. who is with Letéger Fragrances. Mm-hmm. Bobby, you have wondrous news. And first of all, my news is welcome to you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Blackwell. Yes, I think so.
Okay.
You know, the fashion world has been waiting for the last 10 years for the new...
Yeah.
If I may say so, the new opium, the new poison, the new fragrance that connotes by its very
danger,
summoning of images of danger, a wondrous world of
danger,
adventure.
Okay, good. Yeah, adventure.
And similarly, the celebrity fragrance scene has stagnated because there hasn't been a celebrity who summed up that kind of imagery for the woman or the man. We think we've broken through in both those worlds.
Okay, from the releases which they gave me just before we came on the air, you were doing OJ
the fragrance.
Cologne.
OJ the cologne.
Is this OJ? Is this OJ Simpson? Is this OJ Oranges? Is it OJ what?
It's OJ Simpson.
Okay, because we want to know, Bobby.
Yes.
Okay. Let's say this is a fabulous idea. That the cologne has wonderful. What is it? Wood or floral?
Wood.
Okay, notes and all of this, and it's balanced, and it's wonderful, and it's powerful, and it has a great kind of musky,
oh,
whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But we want to know, mm-hmm. Bobby, mm-hmm. as a woman, how do you feel about a cologne mm-hmm. that is named after O.J. Simpson?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he gets what from it?
That's the wonderful thing, Mr. Blackwell. Okay. He gets nothing from this product or any of the revenues from it. He okay. lives in Florida.
Right.
Okay. He lives there to protect his assets.
Well,
Letogere is headquartered in Palm Desert, in California.
Palm Desert.
The product
okay.
itself is manufactured
okay,
offshore,
you know, where
either in Singapore or in Malaysia.
Okay, good.
For him to challenge our use of his name, mm-hmm. and we're not using the Simpson,
only
the O.J.
O.J., okay, good.
So it's a difficult case for anybody to win in any case. And we just, you know, to even get into court, he'd have to come to California, and we don't think he wants to do that
because
anything he might win would immediately be attached by the plaintiffs in the other matter.
Yeah.
So we think we're on pretty good ground because we have the danger, but really none of the money goes to anybody that anybody wouldn't like.
Okay, that's what we wanted to know, Bobby, because we know you're a credible person who wants to base what you do on a credible foundation, and so does Danny Santangelo.
Thank you.
Danny, mm-hmm. we talked about changing your nose, but basically this is just a lot more than just the nose of the week, the nose of the month, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, the phrase plastic surgery, which goes back to the roots of,
that.
You know, before we began calling it cosmetic surgery because people thought plastic was a bad thing
of
to say.
No.
But plastic means changeable.
Yeah.
And so if you get a breast enhancement.
Yeah. Well, I would.
It's not forever. It's not.
No.
And it's never been sold as that. But I think a lot of people thought
the woman thought
of
it that way.
No, it's now. It's for now.
Yes.
And then we can change it. And then we can make it new and better.
Okay.
And it's a process, and it's a relationship with your surgeon.
Okay.
It's an ongoing relationship.
Incredible.
It's a give and it's a take.
Yes.
And
we've been waiting for.
Which banishes the whole idea of, oh, my God, I'm going to make a terrible mistake. Because if you do, you're coming in 6 months, you'll get a new one,
of course, which we love the idea of because so much time we spent saying, didn't you do this wrong? Bobby, what's the market? I hate to put it in commercial terms, but we love fragrances, but we love to see them succeed. Mm-hmm. What's the market for O.J., the cologne?
Young people, young women especially, who are too young to remember the trial, eight, or, you know, the trial was 1994, 95.
Unbelievable.
So we're talking about
teenagers
who just, you know, that was in the past. That's a grown-up's hang-up.
Mm.
And they like to shock their parents anyway.
Of course.
So the mom says, what's that you're wearing?
Yes.
She says, O.J.
Yeah.
Her mom gets a shocked look on her face.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
You know, Bobby Crispin Ball, there is only one, speaking of criminals, thief that we cannot stop, and that is time. He takes everything from us, and he's taken this program. Bobby Crispin Ball of Letogere Fragrances, Danny Santangelo with the new book, Be a New You Every Day. Next time, the winter collections. I'd rather freeze. Till then, strictly from Blackwell. Bye bye.
Oh, not much more time on today's edition of the show. Just time to point out that the Bush administration has pulled the plug on the federal government's $15 million gun buyback program to buy guns back from people in public housing. But plans are afoot to launch a federal gun sellback program, so not all is lost. And Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston have closed escrow on a Beverly Hills home described by the son of its architect as reeking of beauty, charm, and elegance. Wouldn't you love to have a home that's so reeked? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, on your on shortwave, of course, on WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like not getting any more of those damned virus-plagued emails if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, uh-huh. Speaking of that, the email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. No attachments, please. Don't be an idiot. Like the soon-to-be notorious Jay Hill. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.